This is The Bad Batch on TV Podcast Industries. We're back with two episodes of The Bad Batch. Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 6, Infiltration, and Season 3, Episode 7, Extraction.
Have you neutralized the operative?
In progress. However, I have a visual on Dr. Hemlock's prime target.
Is it confirmed?
It's her. She's with a group of rogue clones.
Send the coordinates and prepare for the recovery strike team. The girl must be taken alive.
Understood.
Welcome back, fellow Batchers, to TV Podcast Industries. We're talking about The Bad Batch. Two episodes this week, a big double episode, Infiltration and Extraction. We will be spoiling everything about both, so make sure you've watched both before you listen to the podcast. I am one of your hosts, Derek.
And rounding out this group of two,
yes.
I am Chris.
Yes, no John this week, and I wanted to make sure I got the spoiler warning out before I even gave my name, just in case I spoiled that we don't have three of us on the podcast this week.
I was just more going, extracted John and infiltrated with nothing.
No.
He is currently infiltrating a different country. Ooh.
He is. Ooh. He is. Been away for a few weeks now, but we'll be back next week in time for the next episode of The Bad Batch. But he's missed a big one here. I guess we'll say straight up front, how cool is it that John was absolutely right to watch out for the guy in leggings in the first episode, because he becomes very important in this episode. So lots of credit to John for going, that guy in the background over there. Actually, lots of credit to the animators for showing that that guy in the background stood out enough that you could pick him out in the beginning, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, and freeze and move forward.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. But what a way to spend a massive week for The Bad Batch. Two huge episodes here and really, really fun to have a look at, aren't they?
Agreed. I watched the two of them the first time back to back, I did the skip credits, go straight in.
Right.
And then the second time took a break. I enjoyed it more the second time when it has a bit of time to breathe.
Right.
Because there's a lot in these episodes. Mm-hmm. And also, D. Bradley Baker, just like, he's 90% of this episode.
Yeah.
He's like, do you know what, yes, you're going to get paid the same amount, but we're going to give you at least 10 other people to voice in this episode. You okay with that, Grant?
Yeah, fine. It's massive, isn't it? I wonder, does he have any challenges picking up new voices for the new characters, or picking up old voices? Some of the characters here, you know, we haven't seen since the Clone Wars. Some of the characters here we haven't seen for, you know, two seasons of The Bad Batch. And they all sound really distinct. He does such a great job. And I think literally the cast list for this episode are three people. It's just himself and Michelle Ang as usual, and then there's one other actor who voices a stormtrooper in the episode, and everybody else is D. Bradley Baker, and that's it.
There is the senator, the original female.
Sorry,
senator.
In the first episode, it's Senator Chuchu. Yes, you're absolutely right. Sorry, in the second episode, it's just the three of them. Yeah. There's actually loads more in the first episode.
Did you hear that, Batchers? I was right.
You were right. Absolutely. Speaking of which, fellow Batchers, if you want to hear Chris be right many, many more times, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You can do that by going over to tvpodcastindustries.com. There's a feed up there just for The Bad Batch, and a feed up there for most of the shows that we have. But if you want to subscribe to everything we do, including the other two shows we're covering at the moment, which is Shogun and Invincible Season 2 Part 2, you can get all those on our main feed on tvpodcastindustries.com, along with about 1,000 other podcasts as well. We do also want to hear your thoughts. One of the exciting things, we're recording a little later this week, we've got lots of feedback on this episode and the other episodes of The Bad Batch. So if you want to get your feedback into us for the next episodes, you can email us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com, or pop on over to our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TV Podcast Industries, where there's a spoiler post for every show that we're covering as well.
Yep. And with all that said and done, because that was a lot said and done.
It was. I needed to breathe there for a second, Chris.
Derek, do you want to tell us who gave us what, where, when, and how with your episode details for 6 and 7?
Absolutely. Executive producers of the show are, of course, Brad Rau and Jennifer Corbett. Episode 6 was written by Brad Rau and directed by Stuart Lee, who's directed lots of episodes of the show as well. Episode 7 was written by Matt Mikdavitz, the story editor for the show, and Jennifer Corbett as well, and directed by Sol Ruiz. So, of course, for episodes as big as this, we have the executive producers of the show, the creators of The Bad Batch, Brad Rau and Jennifer Corbett, playing a huge part, along, of course, with the lead story editor as well, involved in the two episodes. So that makes sense, right?
Yeah, well, like, that's the thing. Very much this is Jennifer's baby. Mm-hmm. This has been, she has kind of shepherded these storylines along.
Yep.
And yeah, Matt's kind of trimming the fur off. He's giving it the old kind of like sheep herding, kind of sheep shearing element to get that fine wool out and get it ready. But no, like, this is, when you see those names, mm-hmm. you know straight away that, okay, this is going to be impactful. This is
absolutely
a big thematic piece for the Batchers.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about our friend Batcher.
or our wonderful listeners now.
or our wonderful listeners. But yeah. Overall, yeah, no, it's great to see all of them involved, kind of really pulling this
through. Absolutely. I kind of get the feeling that's why they keep those credits till after the episode's over, so you don't get surprised. Or so you do get surprised by some of the things that happen in the episode. If you know up front Jennifer Corbett's writing it, something big's happened in this episode, guys, you know. But, Chris, do you want to tell us what they gave us with the synopsis for Episode 6 and Episode 7, Infiltration and Extraction?
Sure. Senator Singh of Raxus has a clandestine meeting with Republic Senator Chuchi to discuss the possible unification of the Emperor's adversaries. But they are not alone. A sniper, sent from Tantis by Dr. Hemlock, targets Senator Singh. Rex and his team of former clone troopers capture the sniper and bring him back to their base on Teth for questioning. They learn that Singh wasn't the only target. Omega is on that list too. Rex invites the Bad Batch to Teth, but when they arrive at Crosshair, he is confronted by Hauser, one of the survivors of Crosshair's attack on Ryloth. He deflects Hauser's questions and explains the experiments on Tantus and the elite operatives loyal to Dr. Hemlock. Before they interrogate the captured operative further, a second operative arrives and kills him and learns of Omega's whereabouts. A team of clone troopers are dispatched to pick up Omega, but the operative goes rogue in his pursuit of his mission. The Bad Batch and Echo narrowly escape as Crosshair takes out the operative and Rex convinces the clone troop leader, Wolf, to let him go. As a team rendezvous with Gregor and mourn the loss of Rex's troops, he tells Hunter there's only one way out of their predicament. They need to learn why Omega is so important to the Empire.
Oh,
it's
yes.
All about that M count, you know? It's that M count. Everyone knows it's important, but what is it? Why is it important?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we have, of course, Rex back here, who would have been around someone with a very high M count since he worked side by side with Anakin Skywalker back in Clone Wars, right? So he knows all about M counts, doesn't he?
Well, that's the thing. So they're all like, they all said, oh, I've heard that name before. I've heard that. And you're like, okay, yeah. No, like, you're leaning into it.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually listening. Who was talking about it recently? Another podcaster. I'm going to say Mark Bernardin or Kevin Smith, okay. But I definitely would have been Mark Bernardin over Kevin Smith. Uh-huh. I know he's watching Bad Batch, but it could have been someone else. They were talking about how this opening kind of version of season 3 is perfectly kind of tying in a neat bow some of these. They're retconning some of the unliked aspects of, say, the sequels.
Mm.
And I'm like, I don't like that term.
Yeah.
I like this as, like, they made a story,
mm-hmm.
and here what we are seeing is the expansion of that story.
Exactly.
Really across the rest of the universe and the timeline. And that's what's making this so palatable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's not even palatable. I mean, appetizing, just so mm-hmm. scrumptious coming down. Because we're like, I liked the whole idea of the clones again. Okay, like, this is my thing.
Absolutely.
I like clones. I like the idea. Like, we knew clones were a thing in the prequels,
mm-hmm.
so why not make them a part of the sequels?
Mm-hmm.
So seeing this here, the M count, seeing the what has happened, what goes on to happen to the rest of the batch, mm-hmm. to Rex, and that I'm really enjoying that time that we are spending with them. And this two episodes back to back felt like a good 45 minute, I want to say mini movie, but it was almost like it's not even, it's like a war film. It was kind of like Escape from Babylon Tower or something kind of thing. Like one of those old timey kind of war films where they're in a fortress deep behind enemy lines in the Axis, and you're like, they have to escape the Nazi fortress.
Yeah, but there's also, you know, as happens quite often with the Bad Batch, and especially because we know this is the final season as well, there's lots of callbacks and lots of characters being brought together that will eventually end off together that happen in this episode. I'm sure we'll talk about it as we get a bit deeper into our discussion about the two episodes here. But one of the things I'm sure we've said it before, maybe a lot earlier on in the podcast, but one of the reasons why the Clone Wars as a concept is liked so much is because when we were kids watching Star Wars for the first time and hearing Obi-Wan say to Luke Skywalker, "I fought alongside your father in the Clone Wars," and then we got the prequel movies, and those battles in the Clone Wars were about 15 minutes of the movie, and that's what we all wanted to see. We got 8 seasons of that on screen in these animated adventures of Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan alongside all of the clones. So this is fulfilling what we thought we were going to see when we watch the original prequels, and now with the Bad Batch, they're filling in stories that will eventually play out in the future of the Star Wars universe, which is really exciting, and that's what's so interesting. They can expand and fill in things that they may not have had time in the big movies to do, so that's what's always exciting to see in the animated shows.
Yeah, 100%, and boy howdy is the animation good.
Oh yes, always is, absolutely.
I do feel like this season is they've kind of planted their flag. Mm-hmm. This season they've really kind of went, you know what, we know this is our last, so let's go out with a hurrah.
Yeah.
And they're going for that Oscar animation.
I hope so. Yeah, definitely, because it is as I say, revisiting some places that we've been to before, which we'll talk about when we get in here. So we have direct comparisons to previously animated versions of it in the Clone Wars as well. So you can see the two things side by side as we go into it.
And speaking of getting into it, should we get into it with our blaster point number one?
Yes, we should. Yes.
One day, our soundboard is going to break and I'm going to do the pew, 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 pew.
Someday.
It's always that last pew. It's good, isn't it? Very silent one. Pew, pew. Pew.
I like that one a lot. I like it a lot. Well, our first blaster point, really. Let's talk about the meeting of Senator Chuchi and Senator Singh in the opening of the episode. This clandestine meeting between the two of them where they're being protected by Rex and his former clone troopers. I really like just the setup of this where you don't really know who's meeting who and the reasons behind it. But some of the kind of bigger overarching elements are really interesting about this. You know, Senator Singh, we saw back, I think it's season one of The Bad Batch. He was on the completely opposite side to Senator Chuchi back then. Senator Chuchi works for the Republic. She is a Republic senator. He would have been working for the Separatists back during the Clone Wars, two completely opposing sides. And now they're sitting down at a table to go, hang on a second, the Emperor is starting to gain great power here. Maybe we should start working together. And maybe the Separatists' idea was quite good to keep independent of this empire of planets, right? So I really like that conversation and what was going on there between the two of them.
Oh, agreed. The way they set it up really made me feel like this was, and I talked about how it was like a World War II film.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way. It was like that clandestine behind enemy lines kind of. I can't even think of the name. Just name any of those old Eagle-based named films, and that's kind of what it feels like. Very similar to, like, Where Eagles Dare.
Mm.
Like, it's that behind enemy lines, two clandestine operators kind of coming together.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this again, and I don't want to bang the drum that we've talked about, but, like, the beginning of season two, I was really into it because I was like, do you remember we started seeing the growth of credits and chips?
Mm-hmm.
The internet, like, like, oh, the unified currency of the Star Wars universe is being born here.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Here, along with what we've seen in Obi-Wan, we're seeing the birth, and even beyond that, in Andor, we're seeing the birth of the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
That we're seeing how they're all coming together. This is starting to show us from a more senator kind of, like, that group of people.
Yeah.
The leaders, de facto leaders, if you will. some of those are there outside of the generals and stuff. Those are the ones, and this is what we're starting to see, how they're coming. These two senators and councillors are going to come together and go, do you know what? Maybe this emperor dude's not the greatest.
Well, exactly. And, you know, that's the legacy, I suppose, of what is happening within these discussions. Exactly as you say, it does lead into something like what we see in Andor with senators going against the Senate, which is exactly what Chuchi's doing here. She's making this decision to work with someone who absolutely would have been her rival in the past. If these two people are willing to work together and set up some kind of opposition to the Emperor, well, then maybe there is hope for the galaxy, right? That's the idea. But always in the back of your head, you got to go, well, actually, this show's taking place just a year or two after Order 66, so there's about another 10 years or so before we get to A New Hope. So all these people are working together right now, but who's going to survive? Why haven't we seen some of these characters when it gets up to Andor? Why haven't we seen some of these characters when we get up to Rogue One? You know, so likely that it's not going to go great for them in the birth of this rebellion, right?
Yeah. And that's always the sad bit for me. Which is, I mean, we joke about, like, it's just because it's animated and not a lot of people. I say not a lot of people will see this. A lot of people, fans will see this. And a lot of kind of younger generations will kind of slowly be introduced to this. But let's say the standard cinema going audience will not see this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just sad to know that, like, unless they're going to pull the, everyone gets put onto a Star Destroyer that gets hurtled across to the other side of the galaxy at the end and it takes the player off the board.
Who could you be referring to there, Chris?
I don't know. But then we may get that player back. So they may do that. Like, that's how we may get rid of the Batch, like that, and Omega.
For those of you who don't know what Chris is referencing there, that's how Rebels ended, and that's how we got one of our major characters back in Ahsoka, the live-action show. So, yes, of course. So there is a possibility that there will be a little pocket galaxy that keeps our characters held somewhere until they can be used again in a future project at some point down the line. Yes, I can see that might be the way the show will end. But for a lot of what's going on here, there will be action, there will be a big battle in some way towards the end of the season. There will be Jeopardy. We've still got another half of the season to go after where we are now. So this coming together of these disparate rebel groups, I suppose, may end badly in the future. But it's just really interesting seeing two factions that absolutely would have been opposed to each other, in fact, would have been on opposite sides during the Clone Wars, sitting down together and going, maybe we should talk here. That Emperor dude is starting to get a little concerned, and maybe he's starting to crack down a little too much, so maybe we need to work together.
Yeah.
And in the background, there is a plot to murder Senator Singh with this operative that we see trying to take him out. So as we referenced earlier on, John mentioned this in the first episode of the season, these very unusually dressed character that we saw for a split second in the first episode. So it comes to the fore here, the Shadow Trooper that's looking to kill Senator Singh, but is luckily taken down by Rex and his troops. Those guys, I love seeing them fight. I love seeing them in battle here, you know, even with a sniper. There's a great moment where the sniper comes in, misses his shot, tries to throw in a thermal detonator to kill everybody.
That's so
Rex
good.
Grabs it and throws it back out at him. Really cool, really dynamic, really exciting. Loved it.
Yeah. No, I agree. And if you hadn't have mentioned that, that's the one I would have, where it was just like, he does like almost a tumble roll.
Mm-hmm.
Grabs it mid-roll and then throws it. And I was like, yeah, that's that's how you know these animators are kind of top of their class, because they've made this. We're gonna make this look cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the explosions. And again, really just bringing you back to those wartimey films.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like a grenade in through the window. Yep, that's kind of there. We've talked about all these different shows have different feels.
Mm-hmm.
So like Andor is that kind of thriller, kind of spy one.
Mm.
Kind of Ahsoka was a bit more of that fantasy kind of one. And like this is very much that wartimey kind of one.
And the Clone Wars, of course, has always been
yes.
a real war times type story, and this being the direct sequel to that makes sense to keep that up, especially when you got your major character from the Clone Wars, Rex, being central here as well. So let's talk a little bit more about Rex and some of the other characters in Blaster Point number 2, Chris.
So before we get into this,
mm-hmm.
I have a question. So, yes, this top blaster point is going to be about essentially the Tantus experiments and clones being loyal and the loyalty of kind of those who are still to the Empire and those who are kind of going against the programming, the Order 66 programming. I will admit, I was getting confused because I thought they had rounded up and they were like all of the clones. I thought like the way that this was kind of being slowly portrayed again with Tantus and the way we were getting the introduction of the stormtroopers and like the way Crosshair's team of clones got kind of destroyed and like all that, I was getting to my the opinion that was building was like most clones had been put out to pasture,
right?
Be it through experiments, be it through literally put out to pasture. We saw some of them being kind of let go in the last season, and we saw a lot of them who were dead in the war memorial last season. So I was just. In my head, I was starting to go, oh, no, no, like most of the clones are gone.
Right.
No, no, there's loyal ones still.
Yeah, yeah.
They still, orders are orders. You follow orders.
It's difficult in the vastness of the clone troops to know what kind of number most represents and to know what number a few represents, you know. So effectively what we have here is they take the operative to Teth, their location. So we have a group of clones who are all loyal to Rex, who are formerly loyal to the Empire, who are now working together against the Empire. And it still seems like a small force. It's not everybody. We hear call-outs that Gregor is off-planet, Echo's off-planet. So there could be another group of clones there. There were a group of clones that were working with Rex, protecting Chuchin Singh as well. So there is a force of clones who've rejected the Empire after Order 66. There are, of course, the Bad Batch, who most of them didn't take up Order 66. And it feels like anybody else who questioned that order, who felt bad and sorry after they enacted Order 66, has now either been captured or put out to pasture, as you said, Chris. But has been anybody who's questioning it seems to be taken off to Tantus. But that's not every clone. There are still clones out there that like good soldiers follow orders, they followed the orders and have continued on that way and are still loyal to the Empire. And we meet some of them later in the episode. But it's really good to kind of bring all that together. And we get most of it from Crosshair and Omega when they arrive on Teth to talk through Rex, everything that happened to them on Tantus. So we have that meeting up with Hauser, who we saw before I think it's in the end of season one when he was on Kamino and under attack by Crosshair. So there's some harsh words shared between the two of them there. But we have Crosshair really explaining what's going on with the help of Omega, where Omega's saying, you know, there was tests going on, there was experimentation going on, everybody was getting their bloods taken. She talks about M-Count with them. They kind of understand what that's referring to. They think they've heard about it before. But then it's Crosshair that brings this back in, that there is a group of clones that are still loyal to the Empire. They tried to convert them to operatives. He was one of the ones that they tried to convert to the operatives. And I love that Crosshair goes, I guess, you know, I've always been defective. I'm still defective. And that protected him from becoming one of those clones that's still loyal or one of the operatives. But that's where we get all of the information kind of pulled together from everything that's been happening over the last season or so in Tantus. So it's interesting just that we definitely have another clone force versus these rebel clones, we should call them, I suppose.
Yeah. Again, it's just that I think you put it best there for the first time, which is we'd never know an actual number of a few or a couple or a pocket. Like,
exactly.
They're being very selective in terminology here. Get why. 100% get why.
Yeah.
Because they we have to go from here to standard stormtroopers.
Yeah.
So it's just... it's just interesting. I just kind of was like, oh, I did not know there was that many still there. Like,
yeah.
But yes, the operative one is interesting to me.
Mm.
The experiments on the to turn them to operatives. Because I get the feeling it's a, like, are we talking, like, is that what's causing Crosshair's shakes? Maybe it wasn't the blood being taken? Like, was it actually, like, he was undergoing, like, kind of, I want to say, Clockwork Orange level kind of programming where, like, they have things in his eyes and just, like, staring at puppy dogs going, you must kill the puppy, kill the puppy, kill the puppy.
Yeah.
Or kill the Batcher, kill the Batcher.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it feels like this is some kind of conversion therapy and him battling back against it is what caused his, is what possibly is causing his shakes. There are some great shots with that operative that's been captured. Really felt like the Joker in Batman kind of thing, the way that the lighting was above his head when he was answering back. So you can just see the kind of, just the lights of his eyes responding to them as they're interrogating him. And then he seems absolutely just utterly violent and utterly on mission and really driven to take out all of these people who are against the Empire now. Really liked those scenes there. So, I think Crosshair is someone that would be very likely to go down that path. I can see whether they were trying to convert him. But yeah, just love those scenes then. And for it to end with the arrival of a second operative who effectively just shoots him straight through the heart and kills him immediately. That's his first part of the mission, is to take him out. So I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the for me, it's the, have they enhanced these operatives as well? Because some of these shots are above a normal clone trooper.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are like some of the best, so are they?
Or reach the logical conclusion there. Some of these shots are whose level of shooting?
Crosshair's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is Crosshair's DNA involved somehow?
So, I was going to say, can you clone a clone?
Of course. I'm sure they've tried.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, is it the fact that Crosshair is actually, the Crosshair we have is not actually the Crosshair? It's the Crosshair who was with the Batch is no longer Crosshair. It's not really Crosshair. It's Crosshair V2, where he's a clone of a clone. So that's where the shakes are coming from, the degradation.
I don't think so. I was thinking more that maybe these other troopers are clones of Crosshair. But the only reason I say that is because Crosshair still has the marks from the burns he got on the attack. So so that always that's kind of your indicator. It's the same one. It's the trick that they've always used with the clones. Everybody has a certain buzz cut that they keep for the entire time in there as the character, except for Rex. He's got a blonde buzz cut now, but no, it's usually,
that's not blonde, it's gray.
It's possibly gray, but no, there's usually a stamp on them that's saying this is the look for this character. You can always pick him out of a crowd effectively. So I think with Crosshair, those burns that he has in the back of his head tell you it's the original Crosshair that we've had since the beginning. But you never know. These things twist and turn. You may be right, Chris. But I just wonder if the experimentation that they were doing on him was leading to better versions of the operatives. He was with them a long time. So maybe they did some kind of exploration of that to give them his ability, almost.
No, that makes more sense, the way you're saying it. Like, but I like the idea of clones of clones. It's always a fun one.
Absolutely.
Or kind of dropping over, like, his defects.
But actually, thinking about it, they have to have done clones of clones, because Jango Fett gave his blood and gave his DNA for the original clones. But there's no way they could have had enough DNA to create the millions of troops that they created. They must have been doing some kind of cloning of cloning of cloning at some point.
Cloning.
There must have been. I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't know cloning technology, but I would assume that there are clones of clones out there anyway.
Time will tell.
There you go. Should we go on to blaster point number 3 then, after the test experiments? I just want to take a little moment to talk a little bit more about the operatives themselves, because they are the most interesting new bad guys, I think, that we've seen so far. They're just so relentless in what they're trying to do. You know, it's like upping the ante of bad guys once again. You know, they seem unstoppable. Even on that original attack from the first operative that we see on the planet, he just seems to be almost Terminator-like, you know, breaking through walls to get to his objective until he's finally taken down, you know, and unwilling to give up any information, even though he's being fully interrogated by a proper group of clones. And then the second operative that we have, again, willing to sacrifice the first operative. You know, he's the first time we see him, he's being given his mission and he's going, oh, why have you woken me up? And the minute he hears there's another operative out there, he goes straight on his mission and goes straight to kill him effectively. So they're really interesting, aren't they?
No, exactly. And I think part of it I'm finding most interesting about them is a lot of people talk about, the Marvel MCU first film issue, where you put a superhero against a villain who has pretty much the same subset of powers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing.
It's Marvel Comics since the 60s, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for every Iceman, there's a Fireman. so I found somewhat of this interesting is, thinking back on it, the Batch haven't had an evil version of the Batch to go after. Like, or to who are going after them. And that's what we're kind of getting here. Mm. You're getting, what if the Bad Batch were kind of didn't reject their programming? Mm. What if the Bad Batch were singular focused, on mission, on target, followed orders, and you're getting these what we can assume are enhanced clones somehow, like, because they're definitely, they're doing things that the normal Roger cannon fodder style clones are not going to do.
The regs.
Like, they're hitting off, like, they're doing some shots at some distance. Mm. They're jumping off buildings, like, yeah, they're the Rex level kind of. You're your heroic commanders. Mm. So I found it was interesting. So I'm like, actually, that's a nice way to give the Batch their final goodbye, which is, hey, we're gonna give you some real adversaries here. Mm-hmm. Like, someone who are on your level. And it could be one, but it could be like five of them, 10 of them.
Exactly.
And it's like, go on. Like, we already have your mission, Protect Omega. Mm-hmm. But these operatives are on par with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I suppose for the first couple of seasons, they did try that out a little bit with Crosshair being on the opposite side, but he was going through his own journey. And, you know, there was, you know, half a season would go by without seeing Crosshair. But on the other side, these operatives seem right on mission. But also, there is a possibility that I think by the end of this episode, it does feel much more certain to me that this particular operative is potentially someone that we know that we thought was downed and gone. Think we were chatting obviously before podcasting about this as well. And Chris, I think you're pretty aligned that by the end of this episode, feels like the operative is Echo. And that's going to be the big reveal, right? A couple of reasons for this episode.
Yeah. Very much. Like, it does. And I'm kind of, I think I was calling this for a while. I think we all were. Mm. I'm kind of upset by it.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it should be upsetting, though. I think it should be.
Yeah, but no, I meant more like, his death was so meaningful and so impactful on the team, on, it was almost like it was, how do you up the ante on Crosshair going to the other side? Mm-hmm. We kill one of the brothers. And I was like, and the sacrifice he made to save the rest of them. Mm-hmm. This feels for me, okay, we just put someone, we got Crosshair back, you know, we need another Batcher on the other side again.
Yeah.
And I was like, now, there's some things that point to this being him, like in the thermal imaging of this operative, it looks like he has somewhat metal legs.
Okay.
So I was going, yeah, what? Like, how do you get metal legs? You fall off a really, really far thing. The other thing is obviously the falling off the far, far thing, which you pointed to me and I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the battle that we see between Crosshair and this operative towards the end of the episode. It's just as he falls, it seems like a very far height. It seemed to be telling you, look, he's falling down the side of a waterfall into fog below hand. He's definitely dead. And then he crawls out at the end just before credits. So you're going, oh, okay, they're telling you that one of these characters can fall from a very far height into fog and can get up afterwards and walk away. Well, Echo fell very far into fog. We didn't see him hit the ground because you wouldn't want to draw that if you were an animator on the show, but it leaves the option open that effectively this is Echo. But the other things as well, of course, is he doesn't take his helmet off at all during the episode. If a character doesn't take their helmet off, well, either they have very distinguished features that you will absolutely know the minute they take their mask off, or they don't, of course. It could be just they just want to hide the identity. It looks like everybody else. But they also had a voice modulator on them.
I think that was the biggest takeaway for me.
So if you don't see the face, the voice is modulated, and it gives you a little nod back to how your main character died. It's very possible that this is our Echo behind the mask and who has been converted. I suppose to kind of counter what you're saying, Chris, you know, it's the big thing here for Crosshair is that he's come back. He wasn't able to be brainwashed, for want of a better word, by Hemlock. So that's a big story and a big arc for Crosshair. But if you have someone like Echo, who was the nicest and kindest of the Bad Batch, if you have him being brainwashed, that's another story. It's a different story than having Crosshair being brainwashed. So I don't think it's a one-for-one swap. We need someone on the other side from our Bad Batch. It's the actual character of the person they've chosen, potentially, to be over there is kind of a bigger deal, because it's our little Echo with the brown eyes.
They will have to explain that, though, because Crosshair thinks it's because he's defective, because he's a Batcher, that he was unable to be kind of turned.
Yeah.
Which, if it is Echo, that's not the case then.
Well, maybe a massive fall from a great height might have knocked that out. But
a big knock to the head.
but I think there's something in the discussion that Crosshair has with Hunter later in the episode, where he talks about the loyalty being his biggest thing, the biggest reason why he is so protective of Omega, the biggest reason why he was still loyal to the Empire. All of those things come down to loyalty, and because he was so loyal to them and they failed his loyalty and he realized they weren't loyal to him, he's shut off almost, and he's able to stick to that maybe because he's defective. I don't think it's because he was born defective that he's unable to be converted. I think potentially his defect of I am loyal to a fault until you break that loyalty with me, like that's where he's able to stop being converted. I'm not sure whether Echo might have that, or we don't know.
I like that story. That's a good theory, but that's a good thing. Like, that's a good explanation of why. They have to give that, though. That's the thing.
You have
to kind of explain, because otherwise it does raise the question of, like, why one does and one doesn't.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to, it has to be like the evil. If this happens, I'm going to cry. If it's Hemlock monologuing to Crosshair about why he turned Echo and not him, and it was like, you're too following orders to the fault, and it's something like that, and it's just essentially they're on Tantus and it's by them, like they're captured, and it's Hemlock doing a monologue. I'm like, oh no, please don't do that. That's too on the nose.
Yeah. I don't think they will. I think they parse this out quite a bit. You know, again, we have this Hunter and Crosshair conversation in this episode, but we had one last week, but we get more information this episode. So they parse it out over a few episodes. But I think they've been pretty good for the last 2.5 seasons. So I'm hoping that they won't just have villains standing up telling the entire plan and what happened and what went wrong. We'll see a lot of it, I'm sure, as we get through the rest of the season.
And we've got 8 episodes. You're right. There's 8 episodes after this one.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of time to parse.
Exactly. Let's go on to blaster point number 4, unless you have anything else on the operatives, Chris.
No, let's pew pew away.
Well, there's another group that are here. We talked about it earlier on. The some of the clones are still loyal to the Empire, and we have another group of clone loyalists who are dispatched to come to the planet. Effectively, their mission is to pick up Omega. The operative has called in that he's seen Omega here on the planet. So amongst all of the battling and fighting that's going on between the Bad Batch and Rex and his group versus the operative, we see the arrival of the clone loyalists at the end of episode 6 going into episode 7. But there's a very interesting character that's the lead of these clone loyalists, a character called Wolf, Commander Wolf. We've mentioned before that we are big fans of Star Wars Rebels, and Wolf is one of the last surviving clones. He, Gregor, and Rex are all working together in their retirement. So it's interesting here having this meeting between Rex, who's leading this group of rebel clones. We have the mention of Gregor, who's off planet, who they're effectively going to be meeting. And now we have Wolf, the third of that triumvirate of retired clones who live long past the Clone Wars. So it's interesting to have that moment where we have Rex talking to Wolf one-on-one, telling him what they believe in. All the clones around Wolf are saying to him, no, they're traitors. We need to take them in. We need to take them down. But Rex is saying, I'm fighting the Empire. I'm not fighting my clone brothers. We are all brothers. We were brothers in arms throughout the Clone Wars. We're still willing to work together, but we are up against the Empire. You can't be on the side of the Empire, basically. So that's very interesting. And we see that kind of, again, as we've mentioned before, that call sign that we've heard throughout all of the Bad Batch, the good soldiers follow orders. We see that still within all of the troops that are around Wolf. But Wolf does make the decision to allow the Bad Batch and Rex get away. So he respects Rex. He remembers Rex as being a big officer during the Clone Wars, and he's making that decision. So I guess the seeds have been sown here for Wolf to go up against the Empire, possibly in future. Another possible rebel clone.
Which I like. Mm-hmm. I like that. So this ending for me was all the things. Because again, it was that question I had earlier. It was like, wait, they're still loyal?
Yeah.
So seeing this here, and again, you said that callback, call and repeat, that kind of good soldiers follow orders, good mm-hmm. soldiers. Like, that going and being so ingrained into this storyline, and it's only as we get further and further closer to the end, further into the story, closer and closer to the end of this. I want to call it the Filoni-verse, but it's not. Know what I mean?
No.
In terms of that Filoni time period that's happening.
It's the arc of the Bad Batch. You know, I still think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago as well on the podcast, but as I said, one of the other podcasts I listened to, Rebel Cells, commenting on the fact that, you know, we have all of the 8 years of Clone Wars, we now have 3 seasons of the Bad Batch. It's entirely likely, entirely possible we will have another show that takes off after this period of the Bad Batch. I do feel we'll get a definitive end to the Bad Batch at the end of this season, but it could be Clone Rebels being the next season, where we have Rex and everybody else that still survives this season going off and making their plans to head towards Andor. We could still have another animated series with a completely different central cast of characters that occasionally features
Omega.
But it occasionally could feature Omega coming in and the Bad Batch coming in, whoever still survives the series. But this is a 3-season arc within this storyline. You're right, there will be some definitive end point at the end of this season for the final showdown, I guess.
Yeah, you just need to call it a Star Wars Alpha and Omega.
Well, that's Boba Fett. We will be getting him back at some point. So Boba Fett and Omega on their adventures in the next season, right?
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Where I was going with this scene at this end where mm-hmm. Rex is like, no, we're not going to fight you. Everyone put down your weapons. And Wolf going, like, there's a legitimate 20 seconds where I did not know how this was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know. It's like the tension. I'm like getting so, I get so invested sometimes.
Absolutely.
Actually, what, you do kind of think, oh, is this going to turn into a firefight?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is this going to, like, is this where, like, Rex gets shot through the arm or something? Like, again, just something kind of definitive happens.
Yeah.
And it does, but not the way you think. Like, again, we talked about how, like, when you see Matt and Jennifer being the story kind of writers credited on this episode, you know it's going to be big and impactful.
Yeah, yeah.
And not just, again, not the way you think. They are just building this huge lore of, hey, you got these brothers in arms, and technically clone brothers, really kind of struggling with, well, the people we were loyal to don't like us anymore. The people who, the people who we did love as brothers are now on the other side. What do we do? What's next? Yeah, yeah. Like, again, that kind of, it's just, it's that kind of brothers against brothers.
Yeah.
How is this going to play?
But it's also that big thing about Rex and himself as a character. You know, Rex was right at the leadership level of the clones. He was right standing side by side, toe to toe with Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, he's the one that would command all of the armies. If he's made the decision to go against the Empire, hang on a second, maybe there's something in this. You know, it's that's his position. That's the why he's the right person to speak to the clones. That's why he's winning clones over over and over again to his cause. But you're right, the other thing they set up really well in this episode, and I think it's part of the writing, it's, you know, it's a really action heavy episode for the 50 minutes, let's say, for the two episodes put together.
Yeah.
You know, of those 50 minutes, it's about 20 minutes of, you know, lots of pew-pew and grenades firing over and smoke bombs going everywhere. You know, there's loads of great action scenes in here, which aren't, you know, they aren't that interesting to describe on a podcast, but there's lots of that going on. So you still, I think that's why you probably do think when you get to the end and there's a standoff between the two factions of clones that you might get another action battle for the last 5 minutes of the episode. But the fact that they choose to stand down, have a conversation, and potentially seed in that change in Wolf, which we know happens because he's on the side of Rex in the future. So so we know that change happens. If you have watched the Rebels in the past, you know the character. So so it's interesting that they chose to do it that way. And they kept his helmet on until he takes it off and Rex calls out that it's Wolf. So so you may not know who the character is. So it could have gone any way. You're absolutely right. And they staged it after such an amount of action that it could have just been another big action scene at the end.
Yeah, but that it does end in a good way. Mm-hmm. Like, Wolf lets them go.
Yeah.
And it's... I feel Wolf is going to come back maybe in the last two episodes.
Oh, yeah.
But they're setting it up because he probably is on Tantus.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least connected to... Because it has to be... It's the operative calls Hemlock. Calls home. The operatives are based on Tantus.
Yeah, I don't think he's on Tantus, actually.
Okay.
I think because of... They reveal, effectively, to Wolf that there's experimentation going on Tantus. That Omega's being chased down. They're chasing down a kid. That's wrong, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like he is one of the loyal to the Empire officers who got the call out saying, you're in the vicinity, go pick up Omega and bring her back here, kind of thing. But I don't think he knows about what's going on Tantus, and I don't think you could be on Tantus and not know what's going on. Maybe I'm wrong with that. But I felt like they were a group that may not have been as close to Hemlock as some of the other groups that we've seen. So I'm just not particularly sure. It just felt like they were going, this is what's happening on the planet Tantus. They may have heard about it, but they may not actually be stationed there. But we'll probably find that out next episode that they're going straight back to Tantus. So it could be completely right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's always it. Whenever we make a statement like that, it is kind of like, yep, and the opening of the next episode.
Yeah. Right away, they're back on Tantus. Yeah. Going directly into their digs, which were right beside where Crosshair was living before. I think that's it, though, for that meeting. It's a great moment to end the episode, or end the major part of the episode. Let's close it out with our blaster point number 5. Which is really just a wrap-up of the spare threads. I had actually called this Hunter Recognized the Change in Crosshair, but we kind of talked about that already. I just loved how the scene played out, because we had that moment when when they do another great crash land on the planet, and Omega's being worried over by Crosshair. Crosshair's making sure she has her pack and she's able to carry it, and she's got her new weapon and it's working. You know, he's really getting in her face to make sure that she's protected and safe. I love that her pushback to that to Crosshair is, oh God, you're worse than Hunter, aren't you? You're just as bad as him. And Crosshair's going, no, I'm way worse than Hunter. You do not want to disappoint me. You don't want me on your case, basically. But you see Hunter listening into the conversation, and then they have that kind of, again, that face-to-face, that reconciliation of the two of them as brothers again. You know, I thought it was really good. But one of the other things, again, that's Crosshair worrying about Omega. On the other side of it, we do see Crosshair wanting to go toe-to-toe with the Operative. We see him wanting to be the one that's left behind so everybody else can get away. I wonder if Omega's worrying about Crosshair because of the shakes that she's seen him have. He's not as on his game as the Operative is.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether Omega's, since she's the only one that knows about how bad he's becoming, I wonder if that's why she's worried about leaving behind, saying to him that's not a good idea, you know?
Yeah. No, I think so. I think two things. One, I think, yes, partly she is aware of his defect.
Mm.
And yeah, like, we see that his accuracy rate is really low comparatively to what it was. So definitely, I think there's part of it. I think also there was a point where one of the clones is challenging Crosshair. In terms of, no, you're still a bad guy. Like,
yeah.
You're probably still one of them.
Yeah.
I think there's an element there where Crosshair is trying to prove himself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As, no, I'm good. I'm back. I'm a good soldier following orders for the right side.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of piece. And I think we do get the key, which is Omega.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she goes, you're as bad as Hunter. And he goes, no, I'm worse.
Yeah.
So he's loyal to a fault. We talked about this.
Yeah.
He's loyal to Omega now. She got him out.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be super protective of her. And if Absolutely. That means... He was always the one who liked to try and get up high, sacrifice, blah, 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 blah. Now it's just like, oh, he's going to do it continuously, even if he knows he's going to die. Because when he goes against the other operative, the operative's coming down on the... coming down the side of a wall in the middle of the stairs as they're kind of going down the spire.
Yeah.
His hand is shaking. He's missing left, right, and center, but he's kind of like, oh, this is going to end badly for me. And then he's still kind of hoofs him away.
Yeah.
So I do think there's going to be that call out. I think you're
absolutely.
Right. I think Omega's going to say something to Hunter, or it's going to be the rest of the batch will start to see it.
Absolutely.
And then there's that call out, like, you're not the best sharp shot anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have our own, and that's Omega, because she has her new little crossbow.
maybe, yeah.
Or energy bow.
Yeah, the energy crossbow is cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything else about the episode overall? The one thing that I'll say beforehand, I did like that it is Hauser that saves Crosshair after the battle where the operative goes over the edge. It's Hauser that shoots the operative, even though he was the one that was challenging Crosshair's loyalty earlier on. I think he's realized now Crosshair is absolutely loyal to their cause and had such a bad time at the hands of the Empire. So he's totally on his side now as well. Also, Rex does seem to lose quite a significant amount of his men throughout these two episodes. So again, it's just that overarching story. Again, he's worked so hard to get clones almost liberated from the Empire, making sure they're on his side, making sure they realize what the Empire did to them with Order 66. And now we're kind of seeing him losing that that force that he had behind him. There's quite a few named characters in the episode that we lose here as well. So while they're not central characters, they would be quite central to Rex's cause. And they've been lost throughout the episode. So.
No, I agree.
Yeah, so you can kind of see that fire in Rex's belly when he has that conversation with Hunter as they fly away from the planet, where Rex is kind of going, I can't give this up. I know it seems insurmountable, but I can't give it up until I die or until we win, you know, after having lost however many he's lost throughout this battle, he is absolutely unwilling to give this up.
Yeah. it's like you're not going to give this up till we die. There you go. You said it. You're going to die. There you go.
But that's, again, the wonderful thing about Star Wars knowledge. We know Rex is alive all the way into retirement, all the way past the end of Rebels as a series. So we know Rex is one of the lucky ones that does stay alive
and may
get to the point of A New Hope. Maybe not exactly, but he may get there. So,
yeah. Or yeah. Is it a clone of...
No, it's not.
Is it a clone of Rex? Anyway, no.
It is a Rex, yes. Definitely.
But with all that said and done... Uh-huh. Do you have any final notes?
I do have a couple. Speaking of characters that survive, Gregor is mentioned a couple of times in the episode. And as I mentioned, we saw Wolf in here. We do see all three of those characters in their retirement later on at the end of Rebels. So all three pretty much here in an episode, even though they don't meet with each other. So I thought that was really cool. And then on the other end of the scale, the planet that they're on is called Teth, which was featured in the first Clone Wars animated movie. So all the way back to the start of the animated Clone Wars and right to the end of Rebels, basically all contained in this one episode. It's quite cool.
Yeah. No, that's nice. Again, they really are tying this into a beautiful bow. It's just like, hey, if you've stuck with us for 3 years, we're going to start to give you all these really nice kind of Easter eggs, nice kind of just callbacks.
This is what, about 15, 16 years right back to the first Clone Wars movie, Chris? Yeah. Like, this is all the way back, you know, and you may recognize, and I know you haven't seen the Clone Wars movie for many, many years, but you may recognize that the actual spiral building that they were in looks quite like Jabba the Hutt's palace on Tatooine. Yeah, so
yep.
This is a planet which also would have been controlled by the Hutts, so that's why the building looks really like his building. So and it was, if I remember right, the way back to that movie, I think it was Jabba the Hutt's nephew that lived in it.
Oh my god!
I think, yeah.
We all have way too much useless knowledge in our heads. Zilla the Hutt,
is that right? I can't remember too well, but that's something why it looks. That's why it looks so similar. Anyway, so,
nice.
There you go.
That's cool. So, with all that said and done, then, Derek, final thoughts on Star Wars: The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 6 and 7, Infiltration and Extraction.
Loved these episodes. They were really, really good because there's a really good mix of that great action that we see and those bigger moments when all the overarching story is pulled together with all of these characters. You know, there's characters here, as we said, from Clone Wars that we haven't seen for ages. There's characters from the start of the Bad Batch that we haven't seen in ages, all converging here and all meeting up together to move forward the plan. Some of them falling during the episode. But it really does solidify the central idea of this family coming together and all of the clone brothers possibly coming together in the future to fight against the Empire. That's such a big part of the story and done so well here. And yeah, the action was fantastically done throughout the episode. So it's great to just watch it through without taking notes the first time. So you can just get all the action beats in, then watch it through the second time, take all the notes, watch it through a third time, refine the notes and get all the other bits that I missed and get all the Easter eggs in there. So yeah, I absolutely loved this. I watched this 4 times, I think, since we got the original screeners. So really, really enjoyed these 2 episodes. But of course, as always with the show, it's not that you would take these 2 episodes and show them to someone and say, these are the best episodes of Bad Batch. It's because you come to it with the knowledge of the Bad Batch, Rebels, Clone Wars. It's a really good episode that works really well in this series of the Bad Batch. So really strong, though. Really, really enjoyed it. How about yourself, Chris?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I probably slightly, again, just slightly less. And that is a concurrent issue that we've always had, which is you guys are way deeper on the Clone Wars and Rebels and all that, where you have way more knowledge. So I think you getting some of those callbacks to the Hutts, and I'm like, oh yeah, that makes way more sense. And now I understand it. I'm like, that's even cooler.
Yeah.
For me, it's the wartime. They are leaning heavier and heavier into that. And it makes sense. Again, they're just kind of, it's now, this is not your baby's first war film. This is getting into like the more psychological aspect of brother v brother. of a type of war. And again,
we're getting into the French resistance side of the war rather than just the Allies versus the Nazis. We're talking about the kind of resistance.
And I'm not going to poo-poo the if it is Echo. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to, until they do it.
Yeah.
Like, until it is confirmed that it's him and until I see how it's done, I won't poo-poo it, but we'll see. But I think overall, these two really strong episodes, and again, how they, the fact they released these two together allowed for that kind of, it was so much of a stronger episode for the fact that the two of them were there.
Yeah.
I think that they did the right thing here by releasing these back-to-back.
Absolutely.
But yeah, overall, really, really enjoyed it.
Fantastic.
But I need a drink.
Mm-hmm.
So should we head on over to the cantina?
Yes, we should. As John would say, fellow quizzers, fellow batchers, we have our cantina quiz questions for these two episodes. We have two questions this time, Chris.
Ooh.
Yeah. The question for episode 6 of season 3. Whose meal has Fireball cooked for the team and what modifications has he made?
That's a good one. That's a good one. I don't even remember that one.
Yeah, yeah. Check that out. That's in episode 6. In episode 7, the second question, what are the rendezvous coordinates for Echo to pick up the team?
Ah, and it's not 999 or Breaker Breaker.
No.
That's not a real call sign or location. It's like 555. No, there's actual locations. So one more time for those in the back of the house.
Sure, the question in episode 6 was, whose meal has Fireball cooked for the team and what modifications has he made? And on episode 7, what are the rendezvous coordinates for Echo to pick up the team? There you go. Those are the two questions. Add those to the other ones. And at the end of the season, email us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com with all the correct answers, and you could be in with a chance of getting your hands on 5 Funko Pops of The Bad Batch.
Ooh.
I have them here in the house, so they will be sent out to one of the lucky batchers who gets all of the questions right.
Ooh, whoop whoop, lucky lucky. So make sure you get those answers in for these questions. But you can also get feedback in for us. Mm-hmm. So Derek, do we want to go into some feedback from our previous episodes?
Absolutely. First up, we have Lindsay Lois, who gave us some feedback on episode 3 and episode 4. She says, I forgot to leave my comment for last week's episode, so here's a bit of combo feedback from me. I continue to adore this show. I love how much thought and care they spend to really highlight the relationships among them. This week in particular, really focused on one of my personal favorite dynamics between Hunter and Crosshair. I'm so glad we got to see their internal conflicts and how that manifested in their interactions, not just with each other, but even with the rest of the batch. Omega continues to be a beacon of hope, trying to stir her family in the right direction. So, so happy that we got to have Echo back as well, but it was a bittersweet thing to have them all on Pabu and no Tech. A huge shout out to Wrecker for continuously being the emotional intelligence. He has got the biggest heart for all of them, and I love how much he trusts Omega and that hug he gave Hunter and Crosshair. Shout out to AZ as well, who I hope has mental health modules in his medical programming, because I think we could all agree the entire crew needs to have a group therapy session. Speaking of dynamics, last week's episode was another great one to really highlight. The fandom calls it Cross Dad. Crosshair's reluctance, yet respect towards Omega and still trusting and following her as they made their way through that port was delightful to see. Omega continues to shine in her ingenuity without losing her heart despite all her experiences that will be so easily disheartening. Her reunion with Wrecker and Hunter was so beautiful and emotional, and a much needed relief and comfort. Great stuff, Lindsay. Yeah, there were two really good emotional episodes for the batch over the last couple of weeks, weren't they? As they all came back together and as they reignited that team dynamic. And I think we're still seeing a bit more of that in this episode. Nothing solved instantly among this group, but they are willing and open to coming back together much more as we get into these episodes, I think.
Thanks, Lindsay, for the feedback. For me, I'm with you. I love and adore how the show is putting care into those relationships. It's like one of the strongest we talked about in this episode about how that works. But I think we agree very much on the Hunter Crosshair, that dynamic from like the last episode where they were on the ice planet and that banter is probably a strong term, and the prickling between each other, that relationship and how it does kind of melt like the ice into a nod of appreciation and acceptance between each other. It was really strong.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Lindsay. Also over on Facebook, we got some feedback on last week's episode from Dr. Bob Phillips, who says someone should let the Batch know that family therapy is A, safer, B, less costly, and C, more effective than taking a trip to an ice Arrakis to steal personal medical info. Enjoyed this episode with its nod to the Monster of the Week format, the beauty of Pabu, and the unexpected survival of the Arctic Condor, who I kept thinking would be target practice for Crosshair. That's really good. I like that. That bird that just kept flying in to the scene around them when they were on the ice planet. Yeah,
I was hoping for target practice too, Bob. I literally thought like just a random shot was going to take it and they were going to peel back to someone and it was going to be like Omega with her like her bolt caster kind of just going, got it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say it cuts back to Omega after Crosshair shoots him and just his jaw is wide open going, why did you do that?
But that's way better. That's way better, right?
There you go. I do love the idea. That's the second one of our wonderful fellow Batchers who suggests therapy for the Bat Batch would probably be a good idea. And I probably in full agreement with that.
Agreed. Therapy droid. We also have some feedback from Joel Sharpton on this episode, which was fantastic episode. A perfect example of how the show has grown. And the animation from Lucasfilm continues to impress. Yep. Like, it's a fantastic episode, it's a perfect example, and the animation is top-notch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thanks so much, Joel.
Yep, thanks, Joel. We also got feedback on these episodes, and first up is the one and only Victor Von Doom, or Darth Von Doom, if you will. The animation remains incredible. Now we see what the Imp Suicide device looks like. Now they just need to figure out Hemlock's tracker. Is Omega mimicking Crosshair? She did the same with Hunter earlier on. Her new crossbow weapon looks cool. Rex is a great leader. His dialogue with Wolf is very moving. And it's good to see Crosshair and Hunter working things out. However, I think Hauser is going to be a problem. The Shadow Clone Operative reminds me of the Terminator or Winter Soldier. Yes, Winter Soldier is a good one. That's actually a good way of kind of thinking about it. Terminator, I agree. T-2000 just always keeps going no matter what you put in his face. But the Winter Soldier, in terms of the beginning of Captain America Civil War, when both... Spoilers?
No, I think that's okay.
When Bucky is still going, and it's just like it's when you get into that scene where they're beside the cars and they're jumping down, and when you first reveal of who Bucky is, and like that's what that is. Like you're building up to that type of moment.
Absolutely. I also think there is that moment when the second operative comes in and he says, why was I awakened for this? It does feel almost like they're put into cold storage until they're required for a mission like the Winter Soldier. So good call out there, Victor. And thanks for the feedback. Next up, Paul Tinchy Lee says, the new Rockstars YouTube channel has suggested in their episode breakdown that the surviving Shadow Trooper could be a revived and conditioned tech, which I'm not a fan of. It is interesting that both Shadow Troopers know who Crosshair is, which seems odd if they're put on ice when not activated. On a side note, I started listening to the other shows on the network when I found the Ahsoka show, and I have a comment for Derek about his issues with space whales. We don't seem to have issues with using Loth Cat or Loth Wolf, which suggests that in the Star Wars context, Earth animal category names equivalents in animals that don't have scales and maybe breathe air directly. This makes space whale a perfectly reasonable word for describing the Purgles, tentacles notwithstanding, my two cents. Interesting, Paul. Thanks very much for listening to our other podcasts as well. Good to go and check out some of our side podcasts. On the reconditioned tech, we mentioned it in our episode here, I think there's enough in this episode that says potentially it's a possibility. I would always caution, we've said it on a podcast before, I'd always caution about people giving their theories about upcoming episodes when there's so many previews out there. I know that we got 8 episodes of the season. We're not spoiling anything. I promise you we have no knowledge of what's coming up past those 8 episodes. But if you're seeing people have speculation really early on in the season, they may have just watched ahead. So just be really careful when you see that kind of speculation. But I think there's enough in there. It's entirely possible the tech could be in there, or that it will be revealed the tech is another person maybe going through the brainwashing process on Tantus. But maybe he isn't the operative itself, but he may be becoming an operative like Crosshair was going to become an operative. So it's possible it is in the mix there. So I maybe think that at least gives us a possibility we get Tech back, you know, that the Bad Batch will take back on board and deprogram, and by the end of the season, we'll have all the Bad Batch back together. That's at least a positive thought. So we have a way of getting him back. But yeah, it's a possibility.
Agreed. I think we went through all our reasons of why we think it might be Tech. And as Derek says, yeah, usually if enough big places suddenly like have theories and it's all quite similar, unless it's like obvious, it's usually someone's watched ahead, which is a shame because it ruins it for everyone. That's why you guys love TV Podcast Industries, because we watch, then record, watch, then record, watch, then record. And it is annoying as hell sometimes.
Well, especially in this case, because we actually had the episodes and we didn't get the chance to watch them when we had them as previews, because we didn't have time to record and watch as well. We had
damn real jobs. But damn you to hell.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, we couldn't take an entire day off to watch all the episodes. But it's fine. We're all caught up now, so it's okay. But just on your feedback about the space whales thing, I actually responded to Paul on Facebook, so he's not going to be surprised at my response. I think the big difference really is that Lothcats and Lothwolves are named that. That is their species name. All the characters in the show call them Lothcats and Lothwolves, whereas Purrgils have a name. So to not use that and to just call them space whales just seems unusual. It seems like a weird thing still to me. But it's a good explanation. It's a good suggestion, Paul. From your side, I think it just kind of is something that pops into my head as just being weird. Why would you call something a space whale when you have a name for it? So that would be my only differentiator. But I'm not precious about it. As I said, it's not something that really disturbs me or anything like that. I just found it weird.
Yep, I didn't even remember what you're talking about.
There you go, Chris. There you go. Need to go back and watch the series again.
I do. Nah, I'll wait until season two.
Oh, go watch it again. It's great. It's great in a second watch. We've been doing that over the last couple of weeks. We watched Obi-Wan through from start to finish, Andor through from start to finish, and Ahsoka through from start to finish again. They're great.
You have too much time on your hands. I have a baby Star Wars fan, so he just doesn't, not long enough yet to watch it. Maybe in a while when I get to rewatch it with him.
Yeah, just put them on in the background. He mostly sleeps, Chris, so all you're doing is watching TV while he's in your arms, you know?
I wish. Not anymore.
What's it, 28 hours a day? Yeah, isn't it? That's his usual sleeping habit.
28 hours, he's awake. Finally, we got some feedback from Dr. Bob Phillips on this episode, who had this to say. Toothbrushing! There's not enough dental hygiene in Star Wars, and that could have got us to the poison tooth a lot faster. Plus, Batcher's breath has to be awful, but everyone's fine with a lick from them. It's like a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, they didn't have the same approach to odor. Really enjoyed these two with their dark horror for kids vibes. The indestructible ninja trooper will clearly only be ending with Omega understanding his inner pain and offering unconditional love. I like that. That's how Omega wins the day. In terms of the odor thing, that's always been one that I kind of questioned, but like, you just don't talk. It's not a big thing to talk about, because think about Tatooine. The sweat on that. Like, that has to, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi wearing a big gray woolen kind of cloak over his clothes in a place with three suns. Like, he's going to sweat a lot. He may not feel the sweat because of his Jedi training. His body's still going to do it. So he's going to smell like a hermit.
Well, absolutely. And I think there is even nods to that in Obi-Wan, the TV show as well. But honestly, I'm much more worried about people like the Stormtroopers. They've got a full suit of armor head to toe. So unless they've got fans going off all the time inside there, that's going to be rank. And we have the Bad Batch themselves. You know, we're constantly traveling around the galaxy in the exact same outfits that they that they've had. You know, they've tuned them up and painted them, but we don't see them like lounging around while they're cleaning out their smelly suits either, do we?
So. No, but that's probably why all the Stormtroopers miss, because they have a fan going off in their helmet, and they're like, that's so distracting.
We've solved it. We've solved it. Fantastic. Thanks so much for your feedback, Dr. Bob. And thanks, everybody, for your feedback on these episodes of The Bad Batch. We hope you're going to stay with us for the rest of the season of The Bad Batch. Keep emailing us your thoughts to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com or popping over to our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TV Podcast Industries. Of course, if you want to send in a voicemail to us, because we haven't got any voicemails in this season, you can also just record your thoughts, about a minute and a half, if you want to, and just email us those in to the same email address, or you can go to our website at tvpodcastindustries.com, and there's a place to record your voice on there as well.
Great stuff. Now, don't forget to subscribe to tvpodcastindustries.com to make sure you never miss an episode, because we'll be back with our chat on episode 8, Bad Territory, on March 20th. We'll also be back with our second episode of the ultra-violent, ultra-amazing adult animation of Invincible Season 2, Part 2, later in that week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've already recorded our first podcast about the second half of Invincible, and boy, is that show bloody. Again, there's so much battling and so much blood going on over there. But great to be back in that world of Robert Kirkman's again.
Yeah, and we're talking about space whales here. We're talking about space squids there.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next time.
Thanks so much, guys. Just remember, keep watching, keep listening, and keep being bad. Bye.
Bye.